pretty big deal. I want you to open your Bible with me to John chapter 19. John chapter 19. Moments are just left for Jesus. He's facing death with some anticipation. Anything's got to be better than what he's going through right now. Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. And when Jesus saw his mother there, and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, that disciple was John. Seeing her standing nearby, he said, "Woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." And from that time on, this disciple took her into his home. Now, this scene is fraught with emotion and pain, and the culmination of the ministry. And family are there. Mary had to witness her son being nailed to the cross. She then saw him dying on that cross. She recognized the face of the centurion who stabbed a spear into her son's side. She could hear abuse being hurled by one of those thieves. And she, like most moms, had to just be there. She was powerless to do anything about it, but she would be there for her son. And likewise, Jesus himself, having gone through all of this, with the weight of mankind's sin, hung like a nauseating wreath around his neck. Jesus still looks to John and says, "That's my mom. Look at her." John agreed. You know, the Apostle John lived a very, very long life. Lived longer than any of the apostles. And it is my intention to believe that John took care of Mary until Mary died. I believe he was faithful to that promise that he made to Jesus, perhaps with dying words. Jesus said, "Let John stand in my place as the Son." And Mary, you adopt John right now. And that pair would nurture and console each other throughout the ministry. Psalms in chapter 22, verses 9 to 11 says, "Yet you brought me out of the womb, you made me trust in you, even at my mother's breast. From birth I was cast on you, from my mother's womb, you have been my God. Do not be far from me, the troubles near you." And there's just no one there. Relationship that a person has with a mother is singular. There is no other relationship like it. And it is incumbent upon us to honor with a heart of compassion and firm love, mom. Because I believe you cannot be willfully wrong with your mother and righteous God at the same time. You can't be wrong with mom and right with God at the same time. I think that there are several points that can be made on this Mother's Day that might help some of us here, you sons and daughters, to do better in the future. I think there's some points that I'd like to make in this brief lesson. I think we need to love our moms verbally. We need to love them verbally. I mean, you know that men have a philosophy, I don't have to say, "I love you." But I have to say I love you. You are to know that I love you. She doesn't need me to tell her that I love her. She knows that. I have a Greek word for that. Hogwash. Hogwash. We need to be verbal with our love. A true woman needs to hear those words I know. Children need to hear them. Saying I love you, man, makes you more of a man, not less of a man. Spouses need to hear. I don't know how many remember. Most people my age do, but they're not a lot of people my age. Do you remember Dear Abby? These guys have things to say that the word sharing even during the service. Listen to this. Dear Abby, I listened shortly after Pearl Harbor. 36 days later, I was on my way to the Philippines. En route, the Philippines fell to the Japanese and were arrived in Australia. 11 days after we landed, I met the most beautiful girl in the world. On our first date, I told her I was going to marry her, and I did, 18 months later. While on a 10-day hourly evening, we began. After more than 57 years of marriage and two children, my beloved Mary died 5 days before Christmas. Although we agreed that our ashes would be scattered over the mountain, I found a good apartment. While Mary was alive, she would frequently say, "You don't know how much I love you." And I would reply every time, "Like that. Like that." I never said I love you. Now, her ashes are on my dresser, where I tell her several times a day how much I love her. But who am I fooling? It's too late now. Although I wrote poetry to her, I could not bring myself to say those three words. I knew she wanted to hear those words. As my dearest was dying, and we thought she was comatose, I told her, whispering in your ears, I leave her. There aren't enough words to tell you how much I love you. And a few hours later, she whispered, not enough words. And she died. We need to love the people in our lives verbally. And you might say, well, that's if I understand. You're from Seattle, you're a little bit that way. But I'm just not made that way. I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not the one that just goes around saying, I love you, everybody. I'm not a hugger. I don't do any of that kind of stuff. I wasn't raised like that. And then normally in my counseling, I say, well, you need to fix it. You just need to do it. Well, Jeff, that's easy for you, but it really helps for me. It makes me very uncomfortable. Well, then be uncomfortable. Be uncomfortable. Tell your kids, tell your wife, tell your friends at church. Give them an opportunity to hear the words coming out of your mouth. I love you. I love you. I'm just not comfortable. You'll survive being uncomfortable. There are some things you just need to do. We also need to love our moms through our touch. I noticed this. I had spent a number of years going to convalescent homes, nursing homes. We don't call those words anymore. They have a lot of stigma to them, and I understand it. But one of the things I always noticed was this. Whenever I would go to one of those places, and I found myself as a lunchroom, and I'd be visiting with some of the church or friends of the church, we would be laughing and joking as we're sitting there at the table. Whenever I got up and started to make my way out, people would reach for me. Now, part of that is this. You know, part of that is not what happened to me. But part of something else, they reached for my hand or my arm as though they hadn't touched anybody in a long time. Your mother was the first person you ever tested with your love. She cradled you in her womb for 9 months. She wrapped you up in that love. And when you were born, her first priority was to get a hold of you. Almost knocked the nurse over to get a hold of you and hold you close. She used to rub your feet and stroke your head and cuddle you. She'd say, "Give me church." And then he'd get a particularly dribbly mouth and lean over and plant one right on your cheek. And you had the nerve to say the truth, which is, "Thank you. Thank you for that." She changed your diapers, your potty trained you. She put a Kleenex to your drippy nose. She wiped food off your face. She constantly touched you. She may have to hand you over to somebody else now in your life. She may have to hand you over to somebody else. But she deserved your touch. Still, to God. She deserves your touch. Being a whore is not contagious. Get out of it. Put an arm around your shoulder. She deserves your touch. Let me tell you something that I believe is true, is that we need to love our mom patiently. We need to love them patiently. Mothers have an incredible job with no pay, no position, no respect from the proportion of this world. Very often, the commitment she makes to motherhood is like nothing else. And yet, on the job application, she writes down, "No obligation." No obligation. She rises up to break a day, and through her tasks, she raises. She cooks the meals as best she can, scrubs the messy faces. And while school books, lunches, homework too, they all needed your consideration. And yet the census man says, "No obligation." Don't ever make the mistake of asking a lady, "Do you work or stay at home?" I've done that in my life. Has elbowed me, I've got scarred. It's almost as bad as the time that I asked the lady when she was due, when she wasn't pregnant at all. Oh, don't laugh at me, you've done it too. You've done it too. When there's some things that you thought not to say, and one of those things is that in any way discount the tremendous amount of work that goes on every day in the life of mom. Let me tell you something that the person who is not even middle-aged anymore. Let me tell you this. It's easy for us to forget how hard it is to be good. It is easy for us to forget how difficult that was for us and how difficult it is today. My mother's name is Bernice. She's a striking woman, beautiful. Looked like Lucille Ball, she had bright red hair. She was a movie star. And as she got older and older, my dad died, and then she became pretty infirm. And I had a difficult time being careful. I did. When Sandra and I were called to work with the church in Michigan, and we're living in Seattle at the time my mom lived in Seattle. Right before we left at Thanksgiving, and we were going to be back for Christmas. And so my mother wasn't very healthy, but as she cried, she leaned over and kissed me on the cheek, and she said, Jeffrey, I'm afraid I'm never going to see you. And I said, "Mom, don't be ridiculous. I'm going to be home in 2 months." My mother knew something I did not, because it was 10 days later she died. And I never did see her. again from that time. And with that being the case, I look back so often. I look back so often at the better job that we were doing. You see, being with my mom during that period of time, she was high maintenance. She was a little grouchy. She was a little grouchy. The more patient she was, the more grouchy she was. She had a hard time remembering things, and I would be impatient. In fact, you might characterize me as a son during that period of time as impatient. Go to the grocery store, do all that. All that. And I didn't have time for it, and I let her know. Let me say something to you. And I know some are in class with most of that. Teens, it's unfair for you to be more kind and considerate and patient with your friends than you are with your mother. It is wrong. It is wrong for you to treat your friends' parents better than you treat your own parents. It's wrong. It needs to change. If you treated your friends like you treat your mom, you wouldn't have your mom deserves better because she's not a rug to wipe every negative thought you have. We can do so much better while we can. While we can. For us adults, we need to live with our mom and with our dads patiently. Dobson wrote, he said, I suppose my upcoming birthday started my thoughts along these lines. It's a good time to tell you that what I really want from you kids is something I can never get enough of. And yet they're free. What I want from my kids at this elderly person are the intentions. I'd like you to come and sit with me and for you to be relaxed when you do it. We can talk or we can be silent. All I really want is for you to get it. I need your patience when I don't hear what you say the first time. I know how tiresome it is to always have to repeat yourself, and I know that I have to ask you often to do that, but I need your patience when I think too much about my past, with my slows and my set ways. I want you to be tolerant with what the years have done to me too. Please be understanding about my personal care. I spill things, I lose things. I get unduly excited when I try to figure out my landscape. I can't remember what time to take my medicine. Or if I took it already, I take too many naps. Sometimes sleep helps me pass the time. Where otherwise I would sit here alone. There you have it. Time, patience, and understanding. These are the only gifts I'll ever need from you. Mom. And finally, I think we need to learn to love our mom's patience. Sandy's mom was passed away about a month and a half ago. Do you know what the church did? The church sent us a candle, but it was wrapped in a glass kind of bowl. And on the bowl, the church had inscribed words to my wife regarding Loretta, her dear precious mom. And that was so touching. It sits on the mantle of a fireplace that we see all day long. And it is a gift that you gave us. I can't tell you how much I appreciate what you've done. We need to love our parents gratefully. Loretta, Sandy's mom, one time sat down and she said, you all are living the best days of your life right now. They looked at our face, two kids running crazy. Didn't have a nickel. that never knew where we were going to get enough money. So $25 for the groceries to last us a week. I remember those times. I remember those times. And I remember Lorena looked at us, and we thought she was rich. We thought she and her husband were rich. They probably made $19,000 a year. If I ever made that kind of money, I have no idea what I'd do with it. But she said, Jeff and Sandy, you're living the best days of your life right now because you have your children at home and your parents are both alive. It caused me to realize that she was back sometime after. One thing about parents, you're not going to always have them. You're not going to always have them, no matter how old you are. And then there's nothing else, but there's something else about the gratefulness we have for our moms and our dads. Is we need to have our kids grateful to be with their parents. How well do you do that? Is there anybody in this room that regrets some of the times regarding your treatment of your own kids? Anybody here, anybody regret how you parented at some point in your life? I give up. There are times when this preacher wasn't a very spiritual guy. Times he's like, there are times the kids look to me for an example, and I didn't give them. You know, unless you think that we always have Bible study together every day, you guys probably do. We do. We didn't. I know that you see this on Little House in Prayer, but I didn't personally tuck them in every night. Kneel at the bed and say something thoughtful and profound. Sandy was much more likely to do it than I was. I mean, I'm grateful for the chance that I had to be part of these two people's lives. But I can't make an excuse for it. I was too busy. You know what I did? I put you before my family. For years and years and years, I put you before my family. If I had to leave the church out of my career, I would drop everything to come and take care of that. And usually that everything for my two kids and my wife. Every time I said yes to you, I said no to them. Every time I said yes to you, I said no. Until there came a time when I was listening to a preacher talk on Mother's Day. And as he was talking during this time, he said, preachers, if I knew that your kids were robbed to the core because of your bad example as a father, I wouldn't walk across the street to hear you preach. He said, they're your job. Church comes second. And I made a change, of course. Maybe some would say too late, but still I made that change, of course. I was too busy. I was never there. I had to work, not to cry. Let me conclude. There are really two big lies when it comes to the advice given to young women yet to be parents. Two big lies. Number one, the world tells you this lie. The world tells you you're too good to be married and have kids. You've got two lives going for you to get married and settle down and have a bunch of kids. Every example that we have, particularly Proverbs chapter 31, indicates that high calling is revered by God in the case of heaven. And number two, there's a lie the church will tell you, young parents, There's a lie that the church will tell you is this. If your kids come here, they better behave themselves.
Good to be together as a church, and I love you from my life. Let's stand.